Well, fun.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club. And now, here's your host, Pete LePage, Justin Tyler, and Zelda!
Hey! Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our Man of the Booth Band! And guys, as you probably all know, this past weekend was San Diego Comic Con.
Oh man, I had a great time out there.
Really?
What? You went?
Yeah, I went.
What'd you do?
Without us?
I did a lot of blogging and a lot of panels.
Really?
And
you're just talking about words you've heard.
Yeah, these are words that are popular.
Okay, yeah, no, unfortunately we didn't get to go to San Diego Comic Con, which sucked. We were very bummed about that.
Yeah.
But we did get a little bit of a consolation prize, which is kind of exciting. Bring down the lights, go to the next slide. This is something that was sent to us over the weekend. That, of course, is Neil Gaiman holding a sign that says, I love comic books.
Yeah!
Matt Donnelly used to help out directing the show a little bit.
Yeah.
And
now, even though it looks like Neil is being held hostage, don't let that influence the fact that he must love comic books.
Quarterly really
aged him, I see.
Yeah. To be honest, guys, we should probably actually own up to this. I'm starting to feel bad about this a little bit. This isn't what he wrote. This is actually a different picture. Can we go to the action?
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
he's got a really nice script, though.
Yeah.
It turns out he only loves rabies.
Anyway,
it
makes more sense with his facial expression.
Yeah. I have rabies.
Yeah, that's too bad.
He looks like he was killed by foreign nationals shortly after that picture was taken.
In any case, if you want to know why that happened, if you're ever in Vegas, there's a show called Celebrity Tarot Lounge that Matt runs. He does celebrities' tarots and then does an improvised show based off it with other people, not just him. Yeah. So Neil Gaiman was on it. Very cool.
Yeah.
We have a very cool show for you.
Yeah, we do! Yeah!
We have two great guests for you, so let's bring them out. Ladies and gentlemen, Stuart Moore and Ivan Brandon! So much for coming back to the show, because you've both been on it before. We appreciate that. Ivan, let's chat with you first.
Oh boy.
Yay. We're really going to tear into you now, all right?
Okay.
Really hardcore question. So what are you working on? Well, let's talk about it.
Actually, let's just cover each other's questions.
Yes. Stuart, what is Ivan working on?
I have no idea.
Oh.
Viking. Let's talk about Viking.
Yes.
Viking.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that.
Viking is an ongoing series that I just launched in April at Image Comics with a new artist, well, newish painter named Nick Klein. It's a crime story, oddly enough, and it's an odd format book. I wish I brought it.
Yeah, it's big.
It's an oversized Golden Age book, full color painted. Cardstock, all sorts of stuff, and it's only $3 when everybody else is $4. So it's a conscious effort to get people excited about issues again, since everybody is kind of, I think, dissatisfied with their issue reading. Not everybody, but a lot of people are dissatisfied with their issue reading pleasure, and then moving on to trades and so on. So it's a conscious effort to get people their money's worth and get them excited about that specific format.
What's the appeal of Viking specifically to you? What drew you to these bloodthirsty maniacs?
Yeah, I wish beyond honestly the shallow obvious reality of like you said the fun action elements. It really, I don't recall exactly when it popped into my head. I've been working on the book for like almost 5 years now, or 4 years. Sorry, and so I don't remember the germ of the thing. I know the things that sort of brought it to where it is now. And I know the kinds of things that we were trying to do. I think probably I would say a very strong influence is in watching like Rome and Deadwood, and the idea that this stupid analogy is when you were a kid, your dad would sit down and watch, if you grew up here, your dad would sit down and watch Channel 11 on Sunday and watch Shane or whatever, and mom would make herself scarce and not have nothing to do with it. And then
moms don't like shame.
Moms do not like shame.
And so, then, so you write this to scare women away from comic books. Yes.
No. Actually, quite
finally, someone is turning those women away.
What I was going to say is eventually Deadwood came along, and Deadwood was for everybody. And the idea that you could do a genre book without... without only appealing to that niche, and unfortunately, I think Viking books have traditionally appealed to, Tolkien nerds or Dungeons and Dragons nerds, or no offense to any of them. I'm all of those things, but something that appealed to their girlfriends and so on in addition. So.
And the first issue sold out, right? And it's being reprinted.
It was already reprinted. We actually had a really weird situation where the first issue sold out 3 weeks before it. The stands.
It sounds impossible.
People walk into comic book stores, put down money, and say, thank you.
Wow, man.
We ended up basically, we got our orders and we printed very heavy above it, and then there was a retailer summit a few weeks before the book hit, and they basically sold us out in a day and a half. And to the point where we were oversold by like 30% or something ridiculous over our total print run by the time we got to the store. So we ended up actually having to push the book back and re-release the second printing within a reasonable time frame. I think we've still got a little bit left of the second printing. But yeah, it was really crazy. I'm confident in the book, but you never know how anything's going to do. So you certainly don't expect a thing. Image couldn't remember another case where they sold the book in advance of an in-store date. Certainly the week after or the week of, but never before. It was a really, really strange thing, and obviously very exciting to. It's a weird. It's an off-format genre drama. It's not really something that there's a huge precedent for success. So it was definitely a risk that everyone was taking. So, we would love for it to be successful, but we don't necessarily bank on it. So it's definitely a huge treat when you see this.
And I believe it's the next issue of The Walking Dead is going to be printed upside down on the back of.
Yeah, it's going to, we're printing.
Which really sounds like I'm selling it a lot to you.
Yeah.
No, but the entire, I think it's 64 of The Walking Dead, the entire, for no extra money, $3, you'll get the entire issue of The Walking Dead and the entire first issue of Viking in black and white and in a slightly different format because the page size is different on The Walking Dead.
So Viking's in color?
Viking is full color. I mean painted color. It's beautiful. It's a really, really gorgeous book. I didn't do the art stuff, so I can say that.
Cool.
But it's the whole book for free. They're not charging anything extra for it. Kirkman has just been gracious enough to offer us the space and give people a shot to check it out. And actually, surprisingly, looks really, really, though it is a very colorful book, it looks really, really beautiful in black and white.
Cool. And let's move on and talk about Final Crisis Escape. So what's going on?
It's all right. I can give you the gist of, I guess, the opening credits, so to speak. It's hard to say. It's a book. I'll preface anything by saying that I'm actually really, really fond of Final Crisis, and I read through. I read through recently.
Why do you have to preface it?
Because because of where I'm going with it, it sounds like I'm defensive in the abstract. But what I was going to say is, I'm very, very fond of it. Now, what I will say is, some people ended up confused after Final Crisis. The book I'm doing is also a little bit of a weird book and can be confusing, but our goal is definitely that by the end of it, you should for sure understand everything that's happened and why and all that. So it's in the vein of, as has been discussed before, The Prisoner and Lost. It's a book where basically the mystery is the thing, finding out why. It's a guy, Nemesis, wakes up in the Electric City. He doesn't know why he's there. He doesn't know how to get out. Doesn't know where, why, or how to get out. And it's basically him finding out, what purpose he has there, and so on and so forth. We don't know going into it. The book is narrated by a third person narrator. We don't know who the third person is.
lot of things are redacted.
A lot of things redacted.
I like the book a lot. It has such a like a 70s kind of Outer Limits episode feel to it, and I think that's great. I really like the book.
But my goal for everything, with, I mean, I think there are books that are, that have been sort of intentionally obtuse along the years, and I definitely there are things that I've liked and I've disliked, but my goal for anything is that the book should be entertaining in the moment, in and of itself, enough that whatever questions become secondary. So you want to know the answers, but you're still entertained by the actual moment of those events. So we're trying to do that, but you know, but my guarantee is definitely by the end of issue 6, you'll know exactly what everything was. But the point was, since it's a Final Crisis spinoff,
a lot of times you'd be like, I'm working on a Final Crisis spinoff, and people would be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Before you can even finish the sentence.
That said, I've recently reread the scripts, and if DC, you guys should write your congressman. DC should publish the scripts, because the book is completely different.
Oh, you have a Final Crisis?
Yeah.
Yeah, I sat down and read the whole thing with a couple of the Superman miniseries and a couple issues of Batman, and I loved it. Trying to read it issue by issue was very difficult.
I
but,
keep hearing
yeah,
that from
yeah,
people.
Sit down with the whole
there's
thing.
A different experience reading in the hardcover.
But there's also like the scope of like the stuff that he was trying to pull off in the script. It's really incredible. It was really so much scale. And there's like stupid things, like a gag, like when all the Supermen are flying forward, there's Bizarro flying the opposite way, and that's what gets drawn in.
Oh, Bizarro.
Like just stuff like
that. Right.
Exactly. There was a lot of really, really, really great stuff in it, and the scale of it is really. I can't think of anything else in American mainstream superhero comics that's ever been on that scale. And I actually really think that there's some really, really terrific stuff there. So anyway,
cool.
So hopefully one day they'll release the scripts and you guys can all enjoy it.
Yeah. And we'll all sit down and read them together on the show.
Can't wait. That's good. We don't read enough.
Yeah.
Stuart, let's talk to you. Let's talk about Wolverine Noir. The last issue comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, it comes out tomorrow.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about the series. Obviously, there's been a couple of different iterations on the Noir line, and we were talking about this before. What's your take on it? What did you decide to do going in as a noir tale of Wolverine?
Well, before I answer that, I just want to mention, I was at the San Diego Comic-Con, and I got back very late last night. So if I just start staring into space at the next point on the wall at any point, just like... wake me up.
Oh, that's what we do that all the time. I have to get real sleepy. Yes, all the time. Anyway.
So Wolverine Noir. Marvel's, the brief I got on it for Marvel was Marvel characters in a real world setting with no powers in some sort of dark crime noir situation. The no powers rule got a little, we were talking about this, got a little bent on the Spider-Man and Daredevil ones, because they both have, but everything's pretty grounded, everything's pretty down to earth. In our case, Wolverine is a knife expert, which to me makes him pretty much the same character, except normally the knives are built in, and now he's just had to learn how to wield them.
Sweet.
I
you like that?
Why not?
Wow.
I took
but the whole thing is it comes out of his hand.
It's not the whole thing.
It's not the whole thing.
See, not only
trying to get
right
into a character.
Yeah, totally.
Thing. But I took a lot of elements from the Wolverine origin and sort of scrambled them up, moved them around. So he's the story is set in 1937 in the Bowery, New York.
Sweet.
And Wolverine runs a detective agency with his brother Dog. Who there's something very, very wrong with. And Wolverine hates him but feels an obligation to him for reasons we find out over the course of the story. And there's a mystery running all the way through it that will be revealed tomorrow in issue 4.
Awesome.
Should we just ruin it?
Yeah, let's just
No.
What?
I will say, if you look, I didn't bring it up, but if you look very closely at the, well, you can't figure it out, but if you look very closely at the cover to the regular edition, there's two covers, the regular edition by C.P. Smith, the culprit is kind of reflected in Wolverine's claws, but you can't really figure it out. Like, you have to...
Man, now I'm going to get in trouble. I'm going to be at the comic book store like...
Well,
you do that.
Well, yeah.
You can open up the book. You know?
And also read it. But, yeah.
Oh. That could be in trouble, too.
Yeah.
Is there any correlation between... Is there an X-Men noir?
There's an X-Men noir. We worked... Fred Van Lente wrote that. We talked about it a couple times. We worked... We labored very hard to try and make them line up, and in the end, we pretty much failed because of some last-minute changes in the two books. If you read the books and you think hard, you can kind of make them line up. I am working on, we're talking about doing a sequel to Wolverine Noir, and if it comes together the way I think it will, it probably will align them a little more. But no, they're pretty much separate projects.
Like Dark Wolverine Super Noir.
Dark, yeah.
Just all black pages.
That's cool. That would be fast, too. Yeah. That'd be a big profit margin.
Yeah, yeah. Don't you have to pay the artist? Yeah.
Other thing you're working on is the 99, right?
The 99, yes, which is a multicultural superhero team published in the Middle East. And the characters are all from different countries and represent the 99 attributes of Allah. And we've just announced a team up with the Justice League. So Xavier Nisse is in our game co-writing.
Oh, wow. Nice.
That's awesome.
Cool. And what's that coming at?
What?
No idea.
You're like,
You're like, oh, Allah, yeah. Yeah. I remember you forgot to play today.
I'm sorry.
It was unclear. I only know like 13 of the attributes.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're only probably allowed to use about 66 because without getting into real blasphemous territory. But so far, we've only got about 2 dozen characters anyway. So it'll take a while. It'll take a while.
Great. All right. We
I'm pulling for number 67. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a really good attribute.
That's a great attribute.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking
Let's
about.
Let's move on with our next session, which we like to call the stack.
Yeah!
All right. Good job. First thing we're going to talk about is Amazing Spider-Man, number 600. Super duper sized, 104 pages of material. What do you guys think about this?
Well, MJ's back.
Oh,
she's back. She's back, folks.
You're so excited. Like, that's cool.
You know what? I did enjoy this. I like the Doc Ock fight. I thought it was really cool up until the last page.
You don't like it? Well, I don't know if everyone knows, but they got rid of Spider-Man's marriage a couple of months.
Yeah, they decided marriage wasn't cool enough, so they said, let's ruin a perfectly good marriage.
And then at the end of this issue, Aunt May gets married, and she's throwing the bouquet, and it kind of bounces.
Yeah, ladies are clapping for it.
I just remembered why we don't talk about Amazing Spider-Man on the show.
Yeah.
But that being said, this is a great issue. Really great package, really well done. 104 pages of new material. Shut up. And it's Dan Slott writing, what is it, like 60-something pages?
A lot of them, yeah.
With John Morita Jr. teaming up with Daredevil. Yes, you can take your time for Daredevil.
Yeah.
Teaming up with Daredevil, teaming up with Human Torch, fighting Dr. Octopus. Even though it's like it's a new rebooted Dr. Octopus, it's still fun. It's still a purposely old-school feel to it, I think, which is really enjoyable.
Yeah, but it still fits into all the stuff they've been running. I thought it was going to be a little bit more like traditional Doc Ock comes back and fights. But I liked it a lot. Yeah, Stan Lee's story is a little weird. That guy's weird.
Mark Waid's story is really good about Uncle Ben.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Wait, what did you think of the Stan Lee story?
Weird.
Pretty weird old guy.
To be fair, they could publish 30 pages of Stan Lee just like Excelsior, and it would be absolutely fine.
Really?
Well, for him.
Yeah.
This is a great package. I definitely say pick it up. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you guys think over there?
It looks very nice. I got my fan of Spider-Man and the number 600.
Great number.
It's a really nice artwork in the back issue. The main story looks beautiful, but that's what they
said. I think you accidentally said John Morita, which made me laugh inside.
Pat Morita.
It's not good. Drew with bonsai snipping sneers.
Yeah. Well, it's mainly wax and bonsai.
Is that a Karate Kid reference?
Kind of. It was close to a Karate Kid reference.
Cool.
Let's move on to talk about Legion of Three Worlds, number 5, another Final Crisis spinoff.
Yeah. Just coming out.
Yeah, which is important because Final Crisis didn't happen 3 years ago.
All right.
It takes a lot of time to draw all these little guys.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this issue. This is George Perez, Jeff Johns writing it. Very, again, sort of old school fun going on.
Did you like it because it was really confusing? Is that why you liked it?
See, here's the thing, you don't know the character.
I didn't find it confusing.
Yeah.
So,
no. Oh, you didn't find. Give me this thing.
Uh-oh, he's on his soapbox. He's going to say something crazy. Here, we can talk while he's
someone
who's quote unquote reading.
In his place.
Fine.
Okay, here we go. Bad guy who has a beard for no reason screaming.
For no reason. You have a beard.
I didn't realize your soul was the only mystical conduit left from your universe, a terraform linked to the worlds. And once the worlds died, the remains magic took your shelter in you, and now me. What?
You could probably find something like that in any of those books.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you can find that exact line of dialogue.
And then... So, okay, great. So there's 20 different worlds going on. It's a huge battle. Then there's a guy who looks exactly like the same guy, but he's older. And the one younger guy goes, "Who the heck are you? Mirror image of myself with the same tat in your chest? This doesn't make any sense." Starts fighting him because
so you felt like him in there. You were like,
yeah.
Him. You're
and
like,
then there's a panel that just completely strips of color and then goes back to the drawing.
Because he goes,
yeah, he gets into our universe.
Yeah.
And then there's people reading comic books, talking about reading comic books in here.
And you're like, how deep is the rabbit hole?
I was like, what's up?
There's a man with a beard looking at another man with a beard in the comic book, who's in turn looking at a third man with a beard, all of them confused.
I was waiting for Falcor to come out and be like, "Atreyu!"
One thing to mention, actually, there isn't even actually any art on these pages, it's just mirrors.
Yeah. That's the best comic book of all.
What the F? And then they take time to make grilled cheese sandwiches. Like, what the fuck?
A lot happened.
No, that's a cue. I read that and I was like, oh, it's time to make my grilled cheese
sandwiches. So you didn't like
it. Your intermission.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I love the Legion. I've loved this series up until now. I think it's crazy that in the very last page is Superboy reading the comic book that he's also reading.
Yeah, basically what happens is Superboy Prime, who's the big bad villain in here.
Yeah, please, explain this comic.
Earth Prime is, in the DC universe, our universe. He is the only superhero ever to come out of our universe. It was destroyed way back when. Anyway, at the end of this, he gets sent back to his universe with his parents. He's sitting in his parents' basement, logging onto the DC message boards to complain about how late Final Crisis Legion with Three Worlds was and how stupid the story is.
Could I get a little vodka in
here? Yeah, that's exactly right. I think that's Geoff Johns' worst impulse to follow something like that and like make fun of himself in the back of his comic book. This is going to be around for a long time. He's like, hey, yeah. It was really late, man. I was like, oh, come on.
So you would say, don't pick it up.
I just tear out the last page and mail it to Pete.
All right, let's move on and talk about Deathclock versus Lagoon, number one. For those of you who don't watch it, there's a show on Adult Swim called Metalocalypse that is awesome.
Not awesome.
Whoa.
All right.
Whoa. I'm on it.
Explain why you're wrong.
I didn't like this at all. I don't watch that show because I don't like those guys. They're so stupid. Maybe I'm an old man, but they're so stupid. They talk like the lolcats. I hate them also. That's not a joke. Spelling things wrong is not a joke.
I just found a line I liked, which was perfect for beating your stupid piss beer face in with.
I love Metalocalypse. I love the Goon. I think they work perfectly together. They're hyper violent and ridiculous and over the top, and they're both very cheeky and self-referential.
Cheeky? How are they cheeky? Who's cheeky? Cheeky's like, squeeze your bum. There's no bum squeezing. That's what cheeky is.
Your definition of cheeky just blew my mind. That was crazy. Squeeze your bum is your definition of cheeky.
No, that's like someone being cheeky is like,
let me interject.
On your way.
What does it mean to be cheeky? Because you obviously don't all like necessarily the same thing. So what does it mean to choose over this guy?
Oh, man.
Curtain puller.
Yeah.
Basically, we... I love this. We try to look for things that we can discuss on the show.
Yeah.
Well, but we don't share our opinions beforehand, right?
But you're all forced to read, meaning like,
like
you necessarily read that.
I didn't buy it. No,
right.
I read it out in the lobby, and I was like, boo.
No, this is just some over the top fun. It's two worlds coming together in a good way. And
why is it a good?
If only there were three worlds.
What?
Ooh.
Only there were three worlds.
Think about it. Yeah, that's the breaking
point
for world peace.
Yeah.
Admit that he got you, Pete.
Yeah.
No.
I don't know.
I think this is great. I would say pick it up.
No, stupid.
Yes,
point,
pick it up.
Read one joke from that comic. One joke. What is the name of joke? The guy, one guy is just like, I is P. And he goes on and on about that.
Hilarious.
That's how I talk.
You like that?
Yeah.
So this is like a mirror in a comic book.
How about I'm Frankie and I do cocaine.
Okay.
It's funny if you watch the show. Alright. Let's move on and talk about Incredible Hulk number 600. Another gigantic 104-page issue. What do you guys think about this?
It's you get a lot in there. There's a lot in there. It's fine.
Tell
it's
the
fun.
Truth.
It's fun.
You tell the truth to these
it's
people.
It's fun.
Tell the truth to these people. You tell the truth.
It's a lot of smashing in there.
It's not your fault.
Yeah.
Not you, Alex.
It's not your fault.
Not you.
It's not your fault. It's not your fault.
I got a number. Is that my fault?
No,
this
I mean,
is
it's you know it's rock. It's big time rock all over the place. It's fine. It's fun.
Don't say it's fine. You're just so beaten down by how bad the rest of these issues were. But now it's like it's fine. I don't care.
No, there was some fun.
I don't care about anything.
There were some fun team up moments.
Here's the deal. I love the backup stuff in here. I think there's a great story from Fred Van Lente.
No, the Stanley story, this is even crazier and weirder than the one in Spider-Man. Did anyone else read these Stanley stories? This one at the end, he's like, I had to end it somehow.
Yeah.
It's like, what? Did someone just take the pen out of his hand and publish it? It's crazy. It's crazy.
That's how Stanley works. He's sitting by the printer. He's like, okay, here's the pages.
And the editor's like, I need to read. Can I read?
No.
Can I read
those real quick? I created Spider-Man.
Okay.
I actually have my one Stan Lee story. When I was briefly an editor of Marvel Knights, he did a 6-page story for us, and joke aside, I had approached him about it beforehand, and I followed up a little later, and I asked him, do you still want to do it? And he said, 6 pages, I think I can handle it. And then he was more up to date on faxing and email than guys like a third his age. Like he had everything together, got it all in.
He's always clued in.
I heard somebody, it doesn't have to be about one of your books, but so you don't have to comment on it directly. However, I heard there was a book that he did that someone said that they got the script, a modern book that he did, and they got the script in, and it was like 6 paragraphs long.
Really?
Yeah.
This has already been plotted by someone else.
This
book here has some very nice big pictures of MODOK, which I knew this.
It does.
Yeah. The art's great. The art is very good in this.
Lots of double page spreads. I got to say that the main story to other stuff ratio that was pretty. You have every Hulk cover I think ever.
In
postage stamps, so you can really appreciate them.
Well, you can't use them to mail any.
There's an issue
of,
look, in terms of the main story, I think it's perfectly in line with the rest of what Jeff Loeb is doing with Hulk.
You be honest to these people!
I am being honest. I am being 100% honest because I feel like every other issue I've been like, oh my god, this is so stupid, I love it. And then the next issue I'm like, oh my god, this is so stupid, period. And for this one...
Oh my god,
I'm
so stupid. I'm growing stupid.
Yeah.
I can't believe they put Hulk Gray, which is a decent, a much better comic in the back, and you're like, oh yeah, that's when Jeff Loeb kind of maybe spent some time writing.
Right.
Yeah, but Tim Salesar, you can't argue, is just amazing.
I don't know. When Doc Samson's like, now I'm the bad doctor. I was like, what? About? And then Red Hulk's like, I'm taking away your green powers, Hulk. And then he's like, and then what? And then he runs off. And then what? It's so arbitrary.
This is actually, I was thinking about this a lot this week, and I think there is a certain sense of, maybe if we wanted to make allowances for Jeff Loeb, what he's doing at this point is like, I'll do whatever I want! And basically it's almost like the first thing that comes into his head that he's just running through it like, should MODOK be there? Sure. Should we get rid of Banner's powers? Absolutely. Should there be a Red Hulk that grows to the 200 feet tall and eats the Eiffel Tower? Why not? He doesn't do that, but that's next issue.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. Whatever. Let's move on. Let's move on. Talk about. Oh, you guys must these up. Let's talk about Green Lantern number 44. Continuing Blackest Night. Oh. Pete, I'm very curious to hear what you thought.
I joined the party.
Welcome.
Yeah,
Green Lantern's
what did
great.
You bring? Because this is a potluck party.
I didn't want to bring the free Blackest Night ring because I was scared.
Oh, why?
Well,
it doesn't work. It doesn't make me born.
Yeah, I've heard that before.
That was
for every
every time someone told
alcohol.
Me
that
it doesn't make me evil. Oh boy.
And the issue?
The issue was a ton of fun. Spoiler, John comes back from the dead and wreaks havoc.
Martian Manhunter.
Or John.
Yeah, oh, cool. First, I don't know if everyone's on a first name basis with him.
I call him JJ.
Yeah. Yeah. JJ is popping in.
And
there
were some fantastic panels where he's like ripping buildings and throwing. I was in love with
it. If Pete's coming to the party, I'm pissing in the punch because
what?
I was like, there's no issue here.
What?
No,
are you talking about?
I didn't like it. And I loved every single piece.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, oh man.
For those of you who haven't been reading it, the dead are rising around the DC universe. They have black rings. One of them is John Johns, Martian Manhunter. He comes back to claim the souls or hearts or whatever or something of Barry Allen the Flash and Hal Jordan the Green Lantern. Essentially, this entire issue is one big fight scene, and that's pretty much it.
Right.
With
which
very
means
small
a lot of happens.
And I do think it's a big action fight. I thought it was a lot of fun.
I just want to know more about what's going on, like with.
But I don't think that's what this is for.
I know that. That's why I was like, I want to know more before I see all the fights. Because
no,
there are no stakes
to. Can I ask a question? I don't know, are you guys all like Green Lanterns fans from way back, or are you guys too? You can answer this question.
Yeah, yeah.
If you like me, have never read a Green Lantern comic in your life, is this a book that I can read without like?
No.
If you haven't been reading Green Lantern since last month, this
okay.
Is
no, no, because I'd like to read it, but I didn't mean that to be a smartass. I wasn't like I wasn't trying to say.
Well, this continues right out of the beginning of the Blackest Night miniseries.
Yeah,
okay.
Technically, you should go back and read like a year and a half's worth of comics to really know this.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately or unfortunately, Jeff Johns has been weaving a complicated tapestry at this point for a very, very long time.
Right.
Not a real tapestry.
No,
he's
no,
just
no,
writing
side, at home. He's like, well, I'm going to write for a little bit. All right, no.
Your miming classes are really paying off.
Thank
that's
you very much.
An
yeah,
accurate loop.
Why do you say comics?
Yeah, we talked about the first issue. What do you think about it?
I think I've only read the very first one. I would say in the first one, the artwork was... I thought some of the writing maybe didn't capitalize on the format as well as could be.
Yeah,
the artwork was very... The artwork was pretty much exciting almost across the board.
Yeah, like your comic, it's nice to see art a little bigger. You can appreciate it a little more.
No, I'm a huge fan of anything that, you know... Something like this I'm going to support all the way to the end regardless. I think it's a great effort. I think it deserves to be supported. And I think that something like this is able to exist at a company... a company that I work for, I'm not talking crap about them, it's a company that they're very much a corporation and they're not typically the kind of ground where you grow this kind of fruit.
Yeah. I feel like they've had so many kind of missteps in the past year or two. They're like, let's just try something, man.
Well, somebody pointed something out to me actually in San Diego, which is that this is the first of their weekly comics that is aimed outward. Like it's aimed to get people who aren't already into their universe really reading it. And for that alone, it's an interesting experiment.
Yeah,
great. Cool. All right, let's move on. And we're going to talk about Invincible, number 64, concluding the Invincible War aftermath. We might spoil this a little bit, so if you don't want to know, close your ears. Justin, what do you think about this?
I like this a lot. I got to ask Pete. Now, as a fan of violence in comic books.
Right.
There was one of the most violent things.
And done like really well, where you felt every blow.
There's
like, those headbutts were so
there's
crazy.
There's a two-page spread in here where Invincible, there's this super evil Viltrumite villain who last issue killed his girlfriend. And the whole panel, it's like
but 25... Just to set it up, the reason he does this, Conquest, just the big evil villain, breaks every single one of Invincible's limbs. At which point, Invincible is sitting on top of Conquest, and
he headbutts him like 50 times until his face is a meat mash, and then he's dead.
Yeah,
he basically with his head.
He headbangs a guy to death.
Yeah, yeah, all right, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was like, whoa!
It was very. I'm trying to read here.
Yeah.
This isn't the show for that.
it's a very mild comic book.
Yeah.
Even in the back on the letter space, she's like, Now, I know it's violent right now, but it won't be in the future. And he's lists the issues that are violent throughout the series.
Yeah, he's lying about that.
That's not very good PR either. My book is not going to be out.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of
it. It's gruesome.
I think Robert actually intended it, if I remember.
And that's his face. If
he
you can see it after all that headlines.
Not all ages, but all, the other thing I actually just heard about.
It's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Superman punching a chick.
Yeah, actually, can you repeat what you said?
No, I think originally the idea was to make the book for not all ages, but for younger people. And then I think there was some point where he did a really violent issue, and I guess he ended up having fun with it and said, kind of screw it.
Yeah.
There's more blood in this comic than any other comic
The only other comic where there's more blood is he's writing a Max series for Marvel called Destroyer, where there's so much blood that one panel, literally the entire panel is just red. That's it. And there's not even like dripping blood or like, I don't have blood anywhere. It's just a red panel and people who are red punching each other like they're covered in red paint. That's how much blood there is. He's been on a little bit of a violent kick. Not a little
definitely
bit, a big violent
huge
kick. Also in Walking Dead, same thing.
Yeah.
Spoiler, end of the last issue. Some dudes ate another dude's legs.
Yeah. I know, it's horrifying.
Anyway.
Why did we do this?
Comics are funny.
Yeah. Comics are fun again.
Actually, I thought this was a really great issue, really well done, even beyond the violence. And Ryan Otley's art is
super
spectacular.
Yeah.
Cool. Last but not least, we're going to talk about Captain Britain and the MI-13 number 15, which is sadly the last issue of the title. Justin.
Me? I think we called it this issue, this comic was going to be canceled back at issue 6 or 7.
Yeah, something like that. We actually accidentally said on our video show, hey, sorry you guys, Captain Britain the MI-13 is canceled, which nobody had ever said that.
But obviously we're very prescient in that game.
Oh, please.
Wasn't there like a real rumor going around?
Well, and then,
yeah, I think we started it.
Jim McCann at Marvel went on a message board and was like, well, when good titles get canceled like Captain Britain, everybody was like, what are you talking about?
he was talking about Alan Moore's Captain Britain.
Yeah. Real late-breaking Alan Moore.
But this series was amazing.
Every comic is going to be canceled.
I've not read it, but I've heard
good things. When the revolution comes.
Yes.
I've not read it, but I've heard very good things. I've heard it's crazy in a good way.
Yeah.
It's great.
And it's over the top, but done well in a way that's very enjoyable.
I like Paul Cornell's writing a lot.
Yeah. He's good, and it's sad to see it go, and I feel like it seems a little rushed and truncated at the end. But
really? Did you feel that?
I did. Well, he just... Megan and Captain Britain just get reunited, and then they're like, see you later.
Yeah. Excalibur is one of those series that I just loved when I was growing up. And so it's just, I'm a total sucker for Captain Britain and Megan, and seeing them get back together again.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Last page was really nice. It gives a little goodbye, a little bit of wrap-up for all the characters. This is going to read really well in the trades, I think.
I feel the same way about Death's Head, who gets a nice cameo in this.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
You know, just,
Death's Head fans.
Yeah.
Anybody? 99-5?
Fan? Where's that fan? There we go.
That was a bird that flew. Not a death hit.
Oh, okay, cool. And that's it for the stack! Woo! Okay. It is time for our next section, which is my favorite section, because you guys make it up as your audience questions. For that, we're going to bring out Boothman.
Boothman!
Who should be mentioned lives in the booth.
Yep.
I got lots of questions, man.
All right.
Almost everybody, almost.
Let's get the questions from people who did not ask questions.
Yeah, that's really flip the script.
And that's it for your audience questions.
All right, so the first question. Is bringing back characters from the dead a cheesy way to get readers?
Ooh. Specifically about Black Lantern?
Well, in general.
I like to deal with them, kind of absolutes. I think you can do, you know, I think it depends on the content. I think it could be great and it could be terrible, and, you know. Depends on who wrote it, who drew it, and so on and so forth.
See, I feel like a writer see it as just like something that happens in a story, just like anything else. It's like, oh, this character falls in love. But when a reader does, it's like, no, everyone I know that died didn't come back, so it doesn't make sense to me why this person's coming back.
Right, but by the same token,
they've
been reading comics for long, and you know, it's not. I don't think anybody expects most of these characters to stay dead at this point. I mean, you know, fortunately or unfortunately. I think as a reader, I'm probably not a big fan of the idea, but I think if it's handled right, I'm always open to it.
Yeah, but it definitely takes away from the killing of a character, because it's,
it's not as absoluteness. You know what I mean?
Well, that's kind of what I was going to say. I think the problem is the sheer number of deaths, because that became an easy way to get attention for a comic. So the problem isn't that you bring a character back or not bring a character back. The problem is it's done on a revolving door basis so often that it just doesn't have any effect.
Yeah. I was actually reading a thing this week about Uncle Ben, and they were saying that we used to say, oh, the only characters we'll ever bring back are Jason Todd, Bucky, and Uncle Ben. And then it was, okay, it's just Bucky and Uncle Ben, and then now it's just Uncle Ben.
Yeah. But I heard them explain that at Marvel, which is that Bucky, Uncle Ben is essential to Spider-Man's origin, if you think about this. But Bucky's death is not essential to anything about Captain America.
Right.
He'd still be the same hero either way. Yeah. It's
same thing
that
with,
bothered
like,
him.
Like Doug Ramsey and how essential his death is to the New Mutants.
Yeah, certainly. It changed my whole life. Yeah. I just hope they leave him dead. And a fan outcry doesn't cause them to just have to bring back the man that can speak French.
Who can do that?
Yeah, I know.
What a power. It's so awesome. Cool, raise your hand if you ask that. Beast can bring you a gift. Let's get the next question.
Yep.
What B character Marvel hero would you like to give the noir
to? I actually have an answer to, because I'm talking about possibly doing Ghost Rider.
Oh, nice. That's so awesome.
I'd like to do.
Anything you want to talk about?
I can't really. No, except it would be set right after World War II, and the historical period ties right into it.
Oh, that's so great.
I don't, because I don't even know what books have been done already. Like,
this is the big ones, basically.
Yeah.
Right. I think I was going to say Luke Cage, and then I realized that.
That's
Luke
Cage.
That's
the one
that
works, isn't it?
Very nice.
Iron Fist would be a good direction.
Yeah.
Misty Knight Noir.
Nice. What? What makes a good character to go noir? An edge?
Well, you want them to be, you want them to fit kind of into that crime detective milieu naturally, without it duplicating exactly what they are normally. Like, Batman Noir would be a little redundant, you know?
Like Daredevil Noir.
Daredevil Noir, yeah. I think that was a good story.
Real twist.
Beautiful art. Actually, this probably isn't the right place to do this, but I was going to plug, I have a Wolverine one-shot coming out in November with art by Tom Coker, the artist on Daredevil Noir. And I thought he did a beautiful job on that. But yeah, I know what you mean. Daredevil's a little close to that anyway. Like, it's a little tricky to figure out the hook that makes it different.
What about Ron Space Knight Noir?
That would be good, too. I like stupid ideas. I'm the guy who wrote a triple special earlier this year for the Star Trek line. So.
I don't think Marvel has the rights to Ron, but maybe Dire Wraiths Noir.
What about Galactus Noir? he's
smoking like a giant cigarette.
Yeah, he's like a detective, and he goes around and he's investigating. There's like a sexy planet that comes with him.
I can just eat you up. One page, so.
Cool. Raise your hand if you ask that. Pete's going to bring you a gift, and let's get the next question.
Who's the most overpaid writer today?
Whoa. Overpaid?
Whoa.
You?
Alex Zell.
Actually, it's him.
Yeah, but yeah, by default, me. No, there's no way. None of us know what. We don't know what our names and all that stuff.
No, I know it's him.
Yeah. Overpaid?
Yeah,
by default, I don't overpaid at my lowest rate, I think.
Well, the answer is I'm Brandon, but I don't know. We don't know anybody's pay rates. So.
No, certainly. You can speculate.
Yeah.
Nope.
Who would you say?
Please refer back to my Incredible Hulk 600 review.
All right, now raise your hand if you ask that piece of video gift. Do we have time for another question, I think? Yeah.
Oh, how do you like that, James?
Yeah, throw you a curveball.
No, I was prepared. Anyways, what's the scene
like?
So I
threw it right down the center.
Yeah, I caught it.
And you knocked it.
You caught it? I caught it. You know how baseball works?
I live in the booth. Fair
point.
What's the scene like at San Diego Comic-Con for those of us who can't afford the plane fare? I don't know if fare means food.
Well, as I told Alex, you guys probably all know more because you read the internet and I was just there. And you can only see a tiny bit of it when you're actually at the convention. But it was crazy. It was enormous. The floor, the actual exhibit floor, was maybe a tiny bit less crowded this year because there were so many giant media panels going on most of the time, which was to the good because it's pretty crowded to begin with. But yeah, it was just, I don't even know how to describe it. It was just nonstop. It was, you know, panels, meetings, signings, everything going on all the time. Lots of lines for big. The big thing everyone talked about this year was the Twilight panel was on Thursday, and before that there was what they called the Twilight Tent City, where something like 1,000 teenage girls and their mothers camped out outside the hall overnight.
Wow.
I heard it was like the Beatles. Like, yeah. People, girls were just like falling over and screaming.
Man, did anybody explain to Twilight is bad?
Just like, I think a few people tried, but it didn't go over too well.
I had heard that, and this is definitely true of last year, that the saturation point for the media stuff upstairs was such that the floor was busier on Wednesday night than on Saturday.
That's exactly true. The busiest time was the preview night on Wednesday because there was no media program, there was no panel programming going on at all. So everyone who was there was on the floor. Yeah, and that used to be the kind of easy,
right.
Like, lighter night. It was only 4-day attendees.
Wednesday picked up, like, I know Chicago has been trying to do a previous night and sort of failing for a few years now because of San Diego's success. Because I know Wednesday, like, some people sell out Wednesday. Like, it's gotten so crazy in the last few years that, like, you just get mobbed. And also, everyone's decided they're going to get there first. You know, and whatever it is, they're gonna. If the word sells out, and so you just do all your business on Wednesday.
Yeah, honestly, Wednesday night I got off the plane, went there for an hour, and it was too much. Like,
would there have been any room for a kind of sprightly three-man news unit for me?
I think you might point blank, man. Carve out a little hole.
Just
in
a little triangle.
Yeah.
A square.
Raise your hand if you ask that. Something. That's it for the audience questions.
Yeah.
And now it's time for a section we like to call the Week in Geek. Right, there we go. Let's keep it going, guys. Let's keep talking about San Diego Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Woo.
That's not talking.
I don't know. I went to Siren Fest this week. San Diego Comic-Con, big announcements, I guess, this week. Here's the hilarious part. This was an actual ad for Comic-Con.
He
can never possibly inhabit the part of Todd Warner.
Wow, don't slam Will Wheaton.
Because I think we're probably a little jaded in terms of announcements and stuff. What are the big announcements as far as you guys are concerned? Like, what's the stuff that really...
You know, the biggest thing that came out, I think Joe Quesada was kind of hyping it all week, and then on the Cup of Joe panel... They said that Marvel now owns the rights to Marvel Man, who a lot of people might know better as Miracle Man. Miracle Man was a series, long history that we don't have time to talk about right now, but eventually was rebooted by Alan Moore, and then Neil Gaiman continued and kind of finished the series, but for the most part, it's never been published in the United States, and most of the volumes of it go for hundreds of dollars on eBay. So Marvel...
I'll be selling mine soon. So.
What?
And I'll be selling mine soon.
Oh, yeah. You should probably...
I'm sure that Marvel is, in fact, reprinting that.
Well, they don't know. That's the weird thing about the announcement, is initially it seemed kind of shocking that, oh, my God, after all these years, they've gotten the rights all together, and they're like, yep, got the rights for this one guy. And then you're going to hear some stuff later. So it's sort of a half announcement, but the thing that I thought was kind of cool about that was that is one of the biggest announcements in comics,
right.
And at least there was a big comics announcement at Comic-Con, because
yeah.
Otherwise... It's all movies and it's all TV.
There were a few. That Jim Shooter's going to be doing the Gold Key characters at Dark Horse. That was
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Anything else?
I like the. There's going to be some new Bone stuff by Tom Stagowski, drawn by Jeff Smith.
Right. I thought you were saying there's some new Bones stuff. Like there's going to be a new season of Bones.
Yeah. That's where my head's at. Bones and numbers, man. That's all I talk about. also, Gerard Way's two announcements I like. The new, a third Umbrella Academy and his new series with Becca Cloonan, which I forget, Killjoys, I think.
Yeah. There's also, I'm a huge Flash fan, and Geoff Johns, after Flash Rebirth, after Blackest Night Flash, is going to be writing a new Flash ongoing series with Barry Allen starring in it, and also Sterling Gates, who we like a lot, has been writing
Supergirl.
He's going to be writing Kid Flash and working with Geoff Johns on it, so that's pretty cool as well.
Yeah, that should be cool.
Yeah.
They're trying to do the way that the Green Lantern Corps relationship is,
right.
Where the books coordinate and work together.
Pete, any exciting announcements?
I just can't. I mean, there's never an empty bench.
That's
there's
true, that's
never an empty bench.
Unrealistic.
Right. No, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, the continuity of this ad is terrible.
That's really insulting, though.
Also the kerning. Yeah, the
terrible kerning.
Terrible kerning. But it does come from Chibolingan.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying about that, to stoke the fires of the Marvel Man thing, is the two things that I noticed. Now, they haven't announced what exactly they have the rights to.
Right.
One thing I will say is I doubt Marvel would go out of their way to announce something in that manner if it didn't, in fact, have the rest of the stuff that anyone cares about. But all of the artwork that was released, like including they did a poster of the Joker's editor, was all the 1950s costume, not the modern costume.
Yeah, well, they said,
what that means?
The one thing that they did say was that they will be reprinting the original 1950s and 1960s stuff, because I'm completely blanking on the name of the guy who owns the rights, but...
Mick Anglo.
Yes, yeah, thank you. And he's the one, he owns the rights to that.
He's in his 90s, I think.
Okay, I have no idea what's going on. All right, let's move on. The other thing we're going to do
as
is...
As people age, they get to higher numbers.
Right. This was another big deal at...
I'll explain it to you later.
Great, thanks.
Remember how, like, a year ago, we were different?
Nope. Another big thing at Comic-Con was this piece of footage, which we're going to show to you guys now. Pump that volume, yo.
Oh, God.
Big.
Also the older face with a big beard.
Also creepy.
Yeah.
Everybody,
It is time for our next section, which is trivia. For that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right.
Let's go, Pete LePage.
Well, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for coming. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like a chance to win $25? Simply raise your hand. All right, you, sir. Number four, come on down.
Number four.
What's your name?
Matt.
Matt, audience? Yeah. Audience,
yeah.
Matt.
Yeah!
All right, so Matt, how this is going to work, here's your possible gift card.
Good.
Probable.
You have three questions. For each question, listen to all three possible answers. Go 3 for 3. Gift card yours. Okay, so today's trivia is on Wolverine Noir. If you were paying attention, you'd be able to get some of these. All right, here we go. Thank you, Boothman. And Wolverine Noir. Wolverine is known as, is it A, Jim Logan, B, James Logan, or C, Patch Adams? So it is either A, Jim Logan, or it's B, James Logan.
Technically.
Yes.
Technically.
Shh. Don't tell. Don't tell him until he's older.
You're right. Yeah.
I'm just gonna take a stab at it. No pun intended.
You're sitting here next week, friend.
Would it be A?
A is correct. I made that one even easier. Okay.
P wrote for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire for a week.
Yeah. Didn't work out well.
Lost a fortune.
Yeah. Wolverine's brother, which was said earlier, is known as. Is it A, Brother Logan, B, Dog Logan, or is it C, Amanda Hug and Kiss? So it is either A or it's B, Dog.
It would be Dog.
Correct! 2 for 2. All right, focus up now. Don't get cocky. Here we go. Who runs a hotel called the Puritan? Is it A, Sailor Moon, B, Victor Creed, or C, Fresh Towels McGee? Who runs the hotel called the Puritan? It's either A, Sailor Moon, which really doesn't apply to Wolverine, or B, Victor Creed.
The A seems very tempting, but I'll go with B.
Correct! $25, enjoy yourself.
I loved it. It's
crazy.
Go to a hotel run by someone named Fresh Towels.
Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Well, besides Wolverine Noir, I am looking forward to Proof.
Any particular reason?
Because it's an amazing comic that is drawn and written so well.
Same old, same old.
Great.
I'm looking forward to
it's about a Sasquatch.
Justice Society of America. It's, the Willingham Sturgis team is on board there.
Oh yeah,
which,
first issue.
Yeah, should be good. Also, Fear Agent. We should have that. Closing the series, which is very good.
There you go. Detective Comics' new issue is coming out tomorrow. The last issue was one of the best single issues of the year, probably. So let's see if they can match that. That's a challenge.
Can I point out, because there's a lot of comments I read about that, and everybody heralds J.H.'s amazing work on the thing, but Dave Stewart's coloring is some of the best coloring that's ever happened on a superhero comic ever. Like, it's really incredible, and I think he deserves a ton of credit for that.
I don't think he does.
What are you looking forward to? There's so many pages here. Fear Agent, like you said, I think they're actually, I don't think that's the end. I think there's another arc after that.
Oh yeah, it's the end of this arc.
Yeah.
Six of six.
But there is there's a new Mice Templar.
Yep.
There is.
We agree.
There is a new Mice Templar.
We can't fight the publishing
schedule. There's an Al Williamson Flash Gordon book that I'm excited about here. There's a. There was also a Mark Schultz art book that I'm excited about here. Those are not comic books, so it's.
And put some of your stuff that's coming up that people can check out.
I don't know the dates, but I know Viking number 3 will be out in the middle of August, and it's really, really. pretty stunning looking book. I know Escape.
I think that's in 2 weeks.
Yeah, I guess probably 2 weeks. That makes sense.
And is it wrapping up, or are there two more issues?
There's the next one's just
three
four.
Three more. Oh, right.
No, well, including this next one, there's three. Right. Yeah. Oh, and also, actually, if anybody cares, the artist who started the book, shockingly enough, not finishing the book, not his fault, he was pulled off to do another book, but the as much as I will miss Marco, who started the book with me, the guy who's doing it now is Cliff Richards, who has been doing like, a really, really fantastic job. Really, really warm, dynamic, great character stuff, great acting, great design on, you know, the Electric City is kind of a weird environment. And it's a very sort of weird book, and he pulls off this really sort of strange, absurd environment in a very warm way. I'm actually really excited about people seeing that stuff. So.
Cool, great. Stuart, what are you looking forward to?
Well, I've got Wolverine Noir coming out, as you mentioned, which comes in a regular cover and the Dennis Calero cover, which is a really nice shot of Logan running from a train. It's kind of a cool angle. It's really nice. The thing that jumped out on me that I actually read because I picked it up in San Diego is Ignition City number 4, the Warren Ellis book, which is all about all the space heroes. They're all analogs of like Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers and everything, who are now living in this slum that's ruled by organized crime. And it's a really nice book. It's beautiful dialogue, lovely art. By an artist whose name I can't remember or pronounce, I think. But it's really good. It's really good. Yeah.
And what else is coming up for you that people should check out?
I've got one shot that I believe is called Wolverine Under the Boardwalk, coming in November. It's drawn by Tom Coker, who's been doing Daredevil Noir, and it's a very real world story. It started when I came up with the idea that Wolverine's been around for a long time. And this is about a woman he had a one-night stand with 40 years ago. He winds up back seeing her again and being drawn into a mystery of a murder that happened back then in the city. I've also got some more. I've got an original project called Shadrach Stone that I'm working on at Penny Farthing Press that I'm very proud of. It's this longish standalone graphic novel, so it's a little ways off. But there's a lot of artwork and preview information about it at shadrachstone.blogspot.com. And I'm going to be doing a little more Transformers and Star Trek stuff for IDW.
You've been loving the Transformers stuff.
All the Megatron. Yeah. This is they're relaunching the regular book out of that, and I'm talking about an arc that's probably going to go in the middle of that.
Awesome, great.
Yeah, and can I actually back that up to the last couple weeks, including the San Diego week, to say that there are two really, really tremendous books that you guys should check out if you haven't already. One is David Mazzucchelli's Asterius Polyps.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Really phenomenal.
Man, everyone's going crazy.
It's incredible. Stop. It's really phenomenal. I mean, and honestly, and I say this as a giant Mazzucchelli fan who loves all the work that he did, I say this might be his best work. Wow. So that's the one thing, and Darwin Cook's Parker adaptation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, yeah.
Last week, I think. And,
yeah.
I've only seen the previews of it, but it looks just really good.
It's beautiful. Yeah. If we're going to get all arty respectable here, I'll also I'll also mention Kevin Cannon's book, Far Harden, from Top Shelf, which is a really, really nice like little small format hardcover. He did a series of, I think he did like a 24-hour comic once a month for a year or something and collected it into this.
I'm really looking forward to there's new Garbage Pail Kids.
Cool. We're getting respectable. Yeah,
it's really beautiful. Yeah. Really, it brings comics to another.
Yes, I think it's by Stinky Farts. I don't remember it's Stinky Farts.
His work
or Puss Eye? Is it Puss Eye?
Yeah, it's actually called Garbage Pail Kids. Poop another one out.
Yeah, really, really respectful.
It was Stinky Farts, fresh towels.
Yeah.
Nice.
Great pair.
Before we go, you can check us out almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub. Also, video episodes there now available for download on iTunes.
Oh, what a great site! Yeah. Great website!
A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Ivan for being on the show.
Yeah! Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. Good night!
Thanks so much, buddy!